ladies and gentlemen, tonight, the reigning, defending, undisputed Universal Heavyweight Champion,
Wildcat Radio 2.0. Bear down, you beautiful people.
What's up, everybody? This is Wildcat Radio 2.0, and I'm Green Team's Brett Berry, and we are back to record because, well, one, we missed you all, so it's good to see you again, I guess, and hopefully you missed us. If you didn't, then yikes for us.
Hey, we're on a roll, Adam. It's only been 2 weeks this time.
To be fair, I was out of town, so I was not able to record anything pre-Pac-12 tournament, which, you know, it was a short stay for Arizona. They won a game and lost the second one by a comfortable margin. This, of course, came after they beat UCLA and clinched the Pac-12 regular season title and then just got smoked by USC to end the regular season. And here Arizona is playing for the NCAA tournament, the men and women, by the way. We're going to talk women's basketball later with P.J. Brown from the Arizona Daily Star. But the men's team, Brett, they're a 2-seed, which I think most people figure they'd be a 1 or a 2 out west, right? And I think come selections, and even come to tournament time, I was like, oh, they'll probably be the 2-seed out west. Whatever. I wasn't personally stressed over being a 1-seed or a 2-seed. It's like, ostensibly, yeah, the 1-seed, it should be an easier path, but it's madness for a reason. Arizona goes in. You can make a case they're not playing good basketball, particularly good basketball. They've lost a couple, you know, a few games here late. At the same time, if you take out the games that probably didn't matter to them, they're playing pretty good basketball, if you want to give that to them. If you say, hey, they lost to USC the first time because they just clinched the Pac-12. They lost to Oregon because it meant more to Oregon, and Arizona probably benefits from the rest. Like, you can make a case either way. This Arizona team, the number 9 in the AP poll, and they're one of the favorites by people betting lines to make a Final Four. If you talk to Arizona fans, they suck. If you talk to the numbers and national people, they're one of the best teams in the country, and everyone's probably right at any given time.
Well, it's because Arizona men's hoops is just a Rorschach test for the narrative you want to believe in, right? I was on the record of saying I didn't think it was going to matter. I thought they were going to be the 2-seed in the West. I could make an argument that North Carolina, as the 1-seed in the West, has the worst second round matchup draw with probably a 9-seed Michigan State in that game, right? And also, you know, everybody's Arizona fans freaking out about losing to Oregon, especially, you know, I was watching the game a little bit the first half, and I was unable to watch the second half. I messaged you. It was like, whoa, what happened? They looked like they were comfortably winning. And you had a very succinct answer that one team made shots, the other missed them.
Analysis.
Also, like, you know, it's also analysis for all the fans freaking out that Tommy Lloyd can't win in March. That was his first ever Pac-12 tournament loss in 3 seasons. Everybody calm down.
Well, I remember, like, and I don't want to spend too much time on the Pac-12 tournament loss because I don't think anyone cares, but that even goes back to the point of, like, had they won the tournament, everybody would be like, that's great, but it's all about what you do in March Madness, right, in the NCAA tournament. And it's an unfair position for Arizona to be in all season long. It's like, okay, you can win as many games as you want. It doesn't matter until the NCAA tournament. But then anytime they're losing, it's like, oh, my God, they're terrible. It's like, no, like, if the game doesn't matter, then the game doesn't matter. And you would like to think that college, like, you'd like to think high-level athletes would play hard no matter what. These are college kids. A few of them have been in a national championship game. They know what the ultimate goal is. And the Pac-12 tournament championship was not the ultimate goal. It was a goal, sure. All things being equal, they prefer to win. At the same time, I think Tommy Lloyd mentioned it when he, like, one of his post-press conferences, or I think when they, this Selection Sunday press conference, he's like, they're entering this healthy. Like, the last two Pac-12 tournaments, they lost. I mean, Kirk Creasy got hurt in both of them, their starting point guard. Umar Balo, I think, broke a finger in last year's and was playing with, like, a splinter cast on his hand. I'm not saying that's why they lost to Princeton. But it probably doesn't help when your starting point guard is, you know, has a bad ankle or whatever it was for Creasy. I don't remember if the ankle was last year or the year before, if it was both or a knee or whatever it was. And your big center, who's a matchup nightmare, is basically playing with one hand.
Like, was it one of those years Carissa was shooting free throws left-handed because his shoulder was screwed up?
I think that was last year. Yeah, the year before, I think it was his ankle. But whatever the case is, like, and there's nothing that says they couldn't have won the Pac-12 tournament and gone through healthy and been ready to go. And, of course, Tommy Lahren, the team, they're all going to say on the selection center, like, hey, well, we're rested. We have that extra day of rest. You know, it's we'll have to take it. Like, yeah, what else are you going to do, right? You have to make the most of what you have. But, you know, winning is always better than losing. But winning the Pac-12 tournament, okay, great. Like, if you lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament, no one's going to care. And I was going to say, well, at least they won the Pac-12 tournament. So to that regard, like, yeah, I'm not glad they lost, but I'm glad they're entering round one against Long Beach State seemingly healthy, other than whatever, you know, regular season-long bumps and bruises you may have. Like, there's no big injury to any of their key players, and that has not been the case the previous two tournaments for Tommy Lloyd.
Yeah, I think you're right. I saw you tweet that out after that game, and I'm sure everybody had very reasonable responses to that opinion, as Arizona fans and haters are known for.
They're even keel nature.
Yeah, and, you know, to some extent, yeah, Arizona deserves the crap it is going to get as they lost to a 15 seed in the first round. Okay. It's like losing to ASU in football. Like, yeah, they have bragging rights for a year. Now's the opportunity to show why that was a different team. I fundamentally believe this year's team in terms of mental and physical toughness is a different one than last year. I have more faith that they will not, you know, for lack of a better term, get punked, right? by guys that were just out efforting them. Like Princeton did, which is kind of what happened. Like Arizona should have been able to, impose their will, but that was not what that last year's team was. It was the sports car that if it, you know, it goes real fast for a little while and then it's high maintenance.
Well, there were a handful of times even in that year's game where it looked like Arizona was going to pull away. They got 5-6 and they just couldn't quite do it. And you let the underdog hang around and you miss a couple of shots and make some shots and that's what happens.
Yeah. And that's where consistency is a harder thing, especially to your point of like, you know, non-professional guys, right? It's harder for teenagers and guys in their early 20s. You know, I had a football coach in high school that tried to tell a bunch of high school kids, you need to be able to go in, and he went and physically flipped a light switch because we were joking around. He's like, no, it's time to work now. And it's like, I remember at the time, I'm like, oh, you think high school kids can do that? You're incorrect, sir. Like, you can't just flip a switch and be like, oh, it's go time now. And I think it's the same thing for college, as much as we don't want to believe that. You know, they're not professionals. This is not their full-time job. They're actively limited, ostensibly, by regulations of how much they can be practicing, you know, with their coaches. But all that being said, we've talked about it all year. This roster is constructed differently. You have guys that have been there before. You have guys that have been in the national title game before. They've been through the gauntlet of the non-conference schedule. The entire goal of that, it wasn't necessarily to get seeding. It was to get the experience to prepare them for the games that matter. And when you're Arizona, yeah, regular season wins are great. Pac-12 tournament wins are great. You want to win every game you play in. But really, is for your fans or your critics, nobody's going to care until it shows up in the tourney, right?
And which isn't fair, but that's just the reality. And, you know, it's easy to kind of feel like Arizona plays in a vacuum, that their struggles, their problems. You know, Kellen Boswell wasn't great. Caleb Love had a bad last few games of the season, wasn't looking like the Pac-12 player of the year that he was and got that award, right? Like, Arizona did not look their best. And the question is it because they're going through a slump, because they were tired, because they didn't care, because the opponents did something different? And that's what we don't know, right? Like, did Arizona suddenly forget how to play offense? I doubt that. I don't think teams finally picked up on something. Like, you have to slow down Caleb Love. Like, no kidding. Like, most teams haven't been able to do that, right? It's like everybody says, like, oh, they struggled against a zone. Would we not think other teams played zone against them? Arizona still won 28 games or something, 20-something games? Like, I figure where they're at right now because it's hard with 25 games, 26 games, 25-8, I think, 26-8. Whatever the case is, I don't think that Oregon was the first team to throw zone at them or USC was the first team to throw zone at them, right? And they still managed to win. How did that happen? How did a team that struggles the way they do finished number 9 in the country in a 2 seed, which is one of the top, in theory, one of the top 8 teams, according to college basketball, the selection committee, because they are good and because everyone else has the same troubles. Okay, 25-8, that's what the number is. They're 25-8 going into the tournament. Anyway, I think I had the right number there somewhere. But like, it's there's a reason why that got them a 2 seed, and this 25-8 got them the 2 seeds, because they played a tough schedule and the numbers really like them. You know, do people always say the numbers don't lie? Well, a lot of people are calling numbers liars. Like EvanMia.com, Evan Miyakawa, one of our favorite guests. He has Arizona, I think, it's like the third most likely team to win the whole thing, according to his ratings. Ken Pom loves Arizona. You know, the net rating loved Arizona. And if you've watched them at times, the eye test loves them too. But yet, the numbers don't care that they lost to USC, that they lost to Oregon in the Pac-12 tournament. Because the numbers don't see a problem. Now, do the numbers understand, like, if Caleb Love's just in a funk and can't get out of it, the numbers don't know that, right? They can't account for the mental part of college basketball, the mental part of sports. But unless you believe that Caleb Love is done, like he's toast, right? He's not going to come back and be the Caleb Love we've seen. That Kylan Boswell is, I mean, I know the stories have been out about him, but like he just can't turn it on. He's not going to be the guy he was most of the last month of the season. You know,
would you say if Kylan Boswell crapped out?
Yeah. It's like if Kylan Boswell busts, you know, in the tournament, you know, Pelle Larsson or Umar Ballo doesn't see take a shot. Like if all these things are, that's who you think they are, then yeah, you should expect them to get bounced by Long Beach State, you know, or the second round at the latest. Right. Cause like, yeah, you could say that if you want. I have a hard time saying that. And I think because Arizona lost in the first round last season, people are like, well, it can happen. I'm like, yeah, it can happen. They could lose on Thursday. But the general overall body of work says that they won't. And if you're thinking, well, they lost to teams they shouldn't have lost. They lost in their conference tournament. They can't be that good. Well, Houston lost in their conference tournament. Purdue lost in theirs. Tennessee lost in theirs. North Carolina lost in theirs, right? Like, that's just sports. That's college basketball. And I go back to, did those teams all lose because their opponents wanted it more? Maybe. Wanting it more can be a thing in college sports. And when one team has a lot to play, like Oregon was playing for their lives in the Pac-12 tournament. They don't win the Pac-12 tournament, they're not dancing. Mm-hmm. Arizona was probably slotted into a 2 seed no matter what. You don't think they knew that? You know, you don't think Oregon knew they needed to win, and did that matter? Like, no, I think Arizona tried to win, but there is that extra gear, that confidence, or that, okay, we're going to push through this, that maybe last year's Arizona team didn't do against Princeton, and this year's Arizona team didn't do when you could make a case that there was nothing on the line. Like, welcome to college sports.
Yeah, when you look at a lot of the guys that were on Arizona's team last year, you think they're going to make the same mistake of coming in thinking you're going to cakewalk in this game? I think it's more likely they're going to come in extra super focused and want to make a statement against Long Beach State. You know, and it's, yeah, welcome to, don't make me tap the sign, modern college basketball is parody. And of course, everybody's now expecting that this tournament, with the way the season has gone, is that there's going to be upsets galore, which I, of course, as the contrarian, assume that means we're going to have a Final Four of all 1 and 2 seeds, because, you know, that's just the way life tends to be. And also, I'm not going to lie, Adam, I actively am trying to not let myself keep staring at EvanMia.com's Final Four percentage for Arizona, because, oh boy, I want to believe that. I just won't allow myself to believe that Final Four
percentage. When the bracket came out, I'm like you mentioned, like, is North Carolina the weakest of the number one seeds? There's a reasonable chance that they are. I mean, UConn looks great. Houston can be really good. Purdue already beat Arizona.
No, I mean, they are.
But they're a good team, right? Like, they're a contender. Like, Arizona is not the favorite, but they are a favorite. And a lot of people looked at the bracket, and I don't pay attention to every single program in college basketball. No, I don't watch them nearly enough to have a really good take. That's why I rely on, like, Evan Miyakawa and other sites to tell me, you know, Ken Pom, how good are these teams?
Wait, and you don't watch 200 basketball games a week, Adam?
No, I had to change a diaper, you know, way more fun. No, but like, so I don't know all these things, but most people are looking at their bracket and saying, yeah, Arizona's road, if it goes the way it shapes up, like, there's not a ton of, like, there's going to be tough games. You're going to have to win some close games or beat some good teams. There's no road to the Final Four that doesn't include that. But a lot of people looked at their region and said, that's kind of favorable to a run to Glendale, like, for a run to Glendale, right? They go to Salt Lake City, they'll be in LA if they make it to the second weekend. And then it's playing for a chance to play in Glendale, basically in their backyard. I mean, it's not far from McHale North, either one of them, actually. So, like, if you want to look at it that way, like, I mean, if you're Arizona fans, you probably don't want to look that far ahead, because you know what can happen, right? And you hope that the players realize that too. And to your point, Brent, I'd imagine someone like a Keyshawn Johnson, who was on, what was San Diego State last year, like a 5 seed, you know, who made a run. You have someone like Pelle Larsson or Balu, who were on a team that lost to a 15. It's hard to imagine that any of these guys will go win thinking they're going to walk over anybody, because they know what can happen if you do that. and a lot of them know what it takes to make a deep run. So that combined, you feel like, okay, that switch that needs to be flipped, okay, it's time to flip it. You know, it's time, even if you're favored by 20.5 points over Long Beach State, you know, who I guess is just the beach. Like, they are basically the Barbie movie. They're all Ken. You know, what's his job? He beaches. He's beach. Like, they're beach. Like, it should not be a close game. It shouldn't be. And as long as Arizona...
beaches.
The fighting beaches? Oh, boy. But as like as long as Arizona plays, and like we've said this before, if Arizona plays as like their best, they can beat pretty much anyone in the country. I mean, as long as they don't play bad, they're probably winning this game because they are that talented. And that's what the numbers know. The numbers know this is a talented team, a well-built team with size, with athleticism, with length, with shooting, you know, with all the things that can play locked. Their defense has been pretty good over the last few weeks. Even when their offense was disappearing, their defense wasn't bad at all. Like, the numbers know that this is one of the better teams in the country, and when they're clicking, they are easily one of the best teams in the country. So we'll see if they can do that. Like, the bracket seems to set up nicely enough for them, but of course, again, they can't look past anyone. They can't look past Long Beach State. Like, they have to just win whatever game's in front of them, and anyone can beat them. We've seen that. You know, Oregon State beat them. Stanford beat them. So we know they can be beat by less than stellar teams, but we also know they can beat some of the better teams. So which Arizona shows up, like, we'll find out, but I tend to think it's going to be a better Arizona. It's not going to be the Arizona we saw in the second half against Oregon or the Arizona we saw against USC on, you know, the Pac-12 season finale. It's going to be a good Arizona. It's going to be the best we've seen of them. I don't know. That's hard. But you just have to play good enough to win the game, you know, for 40 minutes, just be the better team that day.
Well, and I think to the last statement you said, the team that is the most consistent and mentally tough team. I've always said this, mental toughness is consistency and discipline, right? And effort. To me, that's like starts on the defensive end, which is more effort and engagement than anything. And like, I've talked about how the Umar Ballo of the last 2 months has been a higher effort, higher engagement
very
guy.
Good,
maybe it was
yeah.
an injury. You know, and I think for Arizona, everybody talks about their high-scoring offense and how teams can defend against them. If they play good enough engaged defense, you don't have to get into an offense to run because you're going to score. That this team has athletes that will score in transition, and that if they're playing good defense that leads to offense, I don't care if they're going to throw zone at Arizona, they're going to beat that team, right?
Yeah. I don't think zone is an issue.
I don't think so either, but like, It's the engagement. It's that consistency, knowing you cannot let up for 40 minutes. I think the guys that played last year will know that you cannot give up even for a minute in March. I think the guys that have transferred in have lived it, know that you cannot give up for a minute in March. You know, if Long Beach State comes out and they shoot 90% from three, despite a hand in the face, they all become Sam Decker, then that's a different story. If Arizona's playing engaged on, you know, at some point, I remember those Wisconsin games, not to bring it up and ruin my birthday, as it is almost, you know, a little over a week away, and we're about to the tradition of Arizona losing to Wisconsin on in March. Though that's not a possibility, at least this year, and at least not until a long way down the line.
Not until a bit later.
You know, if... The thing I'm looking for is if they just even play that engaged consistently for 40 minutes, there will be Long Beach State, barring just, you know, the most insane great fortune Long Beach State can do, right?
So you don't put a lot of stock into their recent play as far as like the, you know, what Arizona's done recently is like, that's, you know, foretelling what's going to happen in the NCAA tournament.
Yes and no. Like, it's hard to, I mean, how many times do you see professionals know games that don't look at the NBA? How many, they're just like the NBA regular season is a freaking joke, man. Nobody cares. You just get into the, you know, 20 years ago, if you weren't a 1 or 2 seed, you weren't a serious title contender. Now, you know, teams like the Suns, to stay in the state of Arizona, nobody wants to face them as a 5 seed because they're a title contender and they'll turn it on.
God, if they could just make a 5 seed. What a run they'd have to go on. But no, I get what you're saying. And that's kind of where I'm at, if that hasn't been clear, is that I don't put a lot of stock into games that probably didn't matter. And I mean, I said that some last year too, and then they figure, oh, they'll turn it on, they'll focus on the NCAA tournament, and they didn't, it looked like. And I think I remember writing after that game, like, yeah, they lost because they didn't they legit didn't try hard enough.
You know, they didn't want it enough.
They didn't want enough, and I hate that as a like that's a cliche. I don't like that because it's to me it's always just the way of saying, well, if we would have done better, we could have won on instead. It gives like no credit to the opponent because you need to keep it about yourself and say it's like, how do you not try? How do you not care? This is like, if you don't care about this, what would you care about? Last year that easily seemed to be the case. I can't see that being an issue this season. Not with this group. You know, now with so many seniors, four seniors in the starting lineup, guys who, you know, want to play professionally, like a good tournament go a long way for Caleb Love getting a look in the NBA, Keyshawn Johnson, Pelle Larsen. You know, Umar Ballo, I don't imagine, is coming back, and I think he wants to give it his all for Arizona and Tommy Lloyd. You know, like these people, I don't expect effort to be the issue. Does that mean they won't just have a night where they can't make shots or their opponent, like you're saying, hand to face, goes all Sam Decker on him? No. But at least if they lose, it feels like they're going to go down swinging and giving it their absolute best effort. Sometimes you play bad. That could happen, right? Like, it happens. But, like, I do think this team is also better prepared to win a game where they don't play that. Like you said, you don't have to win your games in the 90s. You can play defense, rebound, and win 65-60. We've seen them do it this season. So I think this team, mentality-wise, roster construction-wise, health-wise, and you can even say bracket-wise, you know, like setup-wise, is in a better shape to do, you know, to have a good run, to make a long run.
I think so. I mean, I never get too worked up over the bracket because it's like beat the team in front of you.
Sure.
And like, you know, I can see Nevada as a 10 seed being a dangerous 10 seed. I can see Baylor with their athletes being a dangerous thing. But
with
like,
any
guess
luck,
what?
Though.
You're going to have to go through some teams.
With any luck, the NCAA wants to see the Caleb Love versus North Carolina and maybe, you know, hint, hint to the referees, a wink, wink here and there to do what they can to make sure that happens.
Well, I don't think the referees are going to do that. I do think the NCAA, I'm shocked that there's not a higher likelihood of North Carolina, Arizona, and Gonzaga all in the same, like, Elite Eight because they want that to happen for just the narratives. But, you know, Again, it just comes back to Arizona. I think Arizona, from the season they played, the seniors they have, the mentality of the roster, another year of head coach experience for Tommy Lloyd, I don't think they'll get blitzed and be knocked, you know, on their heels. You know, does that mean it's a guaranteed win against Long Beach State? No.
But the moment shouldn't be too big for this team. This is an experienced basketball team that's played on bigger stages than round one of the NCAA tournament.
They've done that this year, opening the season at Duke, right? You know, all that experience I think is going to pay off. They've had resiliency. You know, Tommy Lloyd has a lot of, even the last 3 years of times where it's like, maybe he should call a timeout during a regular season game where it's slipping away. And he's like, no, I want them to know how to handle these situations. Mm-hmm. All of that is building up to these kind of, like, there's going to be moments if they make a deep run where that's going to, you know, play into things for better or worse. And people will backfill the argument of how, whether it goes great and say that that's the reason why. And if it isn't, they'll backfill the argument that they already had a preconceived notion of the narrative of Tommy Lloyd or the player or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's time to put up or shut up. And Arizona has, you know, enough talent, enough experience, enough intelligence the way the roster is constructed that I think they have as good a shot as anybody to make a really deep run.
Well said, Brett. Well said. But let's take a break. When we come back, we're going to go from one team that has a roster that seems deep and prepared to make a deep run to another that's also in a tournament but is not very deep and is on just an improbable run at this moment. We're going to talk to P.J. Brown from the Arizona Daily Star about the Arizona women's basketball team who is getting ready for their game against Auburn in one of their play-in games. So, yeah, let's take a break and get to that.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get-to-know-ya at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's you know.
Trying to get him out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
We're back. It's Wildcat Radio 2.0. We are joined by PJ Brown of the Arizona Daily Star, the Tucson Star, the Wildcaster app. She is covering the Arizona women's basketball team. They're in Connecticut right now, facing off against Auburn in a game that, I mean, I think if we're all being honest, we weren't sure what happened going into Selection Sunday. It was tight. Like, we're used to Arizona being in the tournament lately, but this season with the ups and downs, the departures, the injuries, just all the drama, I think is probably a good way to sum it up. And here they are playing a tournament game. PJ, how did we get here?
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. They just turned it on at the end. I think the two things that sort of got them in is the crazy thing that Adia did with scheduling, making such a hard non-conference schedule. It was the hardest non-conference schedule she's had in her entire 8 years. And she said recently that, you know, had she known that, like, this was the wrong year to do it, right? She didn't know she was going to have all the injuries. She didn't know two people were going to leave the program. None of that. And had she had known that, like, in all of that, like, if she would have scheduled maybe one of those teams or something, she would have had 20 wins. And they wouldn't have been on the bubble or anything like that. And the weird thing is also is they always tell you to, like, have a harder schedule. Well, it worked out for them in the end, because what got them in was they were number two in strength of schedule. And the Pac-12 is number one. I think all 12 teams are in the top 15 of strength of schedules individually. That really helped them that the Pac-12 was so good this year. And then their run at the end, 5-3 over the last eight games, beating Stanford, following up and beating Cal that weekend, which I think was a key win. People aren't talking about that. If you don't finish that weekend with a sweep, it, you know, any young team could have just, like, folded in that moment. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, that doesn't help you. So I think that showed, I think, the committee how strong a team they are. And then the last week playing USC tight and playing them, you know, only losing both games by a total of 5 points, and shutting down Juju Watkins in both those games, I think that got them into the tournament. And that was the difference maker.
Yeah, I, you know, usually I'm an advocate for scheduling a hard schedule, but the Pac-12 in women's hoops this year was basically the SEC football or Big 12 men's football. I don't think we needed to load the schedule anymore. But after going through the gauntlet of that non-conference schedule, the super gauntlet of conference play, the turmoil of the, you know, in-season departures and kind of the drama associated with some of those things, the injuries, you know, Arizona's left with a short bench now in the postseason. You know, what can we reasonably expect from this team going into the March Madness tourney, knowing they have a short bench? And, you know, we know they're going to play hard, but do they have enough bodies just to keep going in a especially starting to play in a game?
Yeah, so there's two things about this. One is they had like 9 days off, right? I shouldn't say 9 days off because they worked, but after the Pac-12 tournament was over, they took a couple days to rest, and then they got back to work. And when they got back to work, they didn't, you know, this team hasn't been doing full-on practices all season. They do walkthroughs. They do a lot of film study because, you know, they can't have anybody injured. They do have every team has nagging injuries, by the way, at this point in the season. From February on, they just play with nagging injuries. So the fact that they got a little bit of rest, and some of them probably didn't practice, let's be honest, like every single day last week, I think that helps. And the other thing is that, you know, when you go into March Madness, teams only play with like seven players. If you look back, two things, Notre Dame won a championship with eight players a number of years ago. So it's not unheard of. And also when you look back at Adia's, the Wildcats run in 2021, from the, I think after the second round, she only played seven players the rest of the way. That's what happens. In these games, your bench, everything shrinks, your rotation shrinks, and every team basically plays seven, at the most eight players. So some play six, right? And so my thing is, they've been playing like this all year, or the majority, I mean, obviously in the last month or so, but they've been playing shorthanded all year. And then in the last month, they just, it's their thing, right? And now that they've had a little bit of rest between the end of the regular season, the Pac-12 tournament, and now this. And so that little extra rest. And then they have this mentality of like us against the world. Nobody believes in them, right? I think that all plays in their favor. If I were Auburn, I'd be a little, well, no team's going to tell you they're scared, but if I were them, I'd be ready.
You know, what I heard there was that Adia Barnes was playing chess while everyone was playing checkers. She made sure that rotation was short so that teams used to playing that way. Everyone's going to be like, we're playing how many minutes? We're exhausted. Like, I mean, it's you work with what you got, right? And I'm sure this is not how Adia Barnes drew it up, especially, you know, this far removed. Like, I remember a few years ago there in the national championship game there, and Ari McDonald shot away from winning the whole thing. And the expectation was that Arizona women's basketball would be competing for championships from there. Maybe not like Final Fours every year, but be a tournament team and have a chance. A few years down the road, they're still in the tournament, but it's not how it was drawn up. The program's not exactly, I kind of liken it to the baseball program last season, in that if they didn't play well down the stretch and make the tournament, the season would have gone down as a colossal disappointment. But they made the tournament, so it's okay, let's see what can happen. Like, that is your goal, is to get there. The job Adia has done this season, do you look at it as like, on one hand, it's impressive as hell, right? Getting to the tournament with this much attrition, this much injuries and all that. On the other side, you shouldn't necessarily have to have that much attrition. You shouldn't necessarily have to have a short bench like that because of this. Like, how do you judge the job she's done this year?
I think she's done an amazing job. I think it's one of her best coaching performances since she's been here. The fact that she rode with three freshmen and she had, you know, sort of planned with going at least with one freshman to begin with. Montea Dew was going to be a starter until she got injured. I mean, that was the plan. So at least one freshman was going to start again. And I think she figured Brea probably would start. So you know you're going in with something, right? And then to not only do this, but continue what she usually does is have your team peak at the right time of year. Get your team to buy in. She's told me the other day, you know, she puts it on them because they came to her and said, Coach, we got your back. We'll do anything you want us to do. And they all came together. But it's a combination of the fact that she set the groundwork for that, right? She's the one who sets the rules, the standards for the program. And those players have to buy in from the beginning to come to this point. Also, she's, I believe, one of the few coaches who, you know, she teaches every single day of the year. So when you get the number of hours each week that you can practice, Adia cuts it into a certain format. Everybody else just practices, right? She takes it and says, we're going to take a bunch of that and we're going to have individual skills session. So she is developing you along with her coaches every single day of the year. You're getting better every single day of the year. You've seen it on the court. Jada Williams basically won that Stanford game for them, right? 14 points in the last 3:28 of the game. Isis Bay comes up the game of her career, 29 points in a 3-overtime win against Washington. What has Helena Pollo been doing the last month? It's been phenomenal. You look at all these players, Skylar Jones, you look at even Brea at the end, you look at Courtney, you see these players developing, growing every single day. That's what Adia Barnes does best. The other thing that needs to be said is, you know, there's been a perfect storm in college sports, right? COVID hits, NIL starts, and the transfer your sitting out year goes away, right? Everybody can just transfer whenever they want, basically. Those three things hit. So the combination of that makes it harder, I don't care who you are, to continue to be sustained success and continue to go far into the tournament every year. The other thing is, even if those things hadn't have happened, look how hard it is for teams to get back there. Sometimes you have to have a little bit of luck with the seeding and your path. Sometimes somebody else beats somebody and then it matches up better for you. Sometimes you catch a little of that magic, like the 2021 run, right? Nobody expected them to do it. There are a lot of things that go into that. You can look at the men's team to show you how hard it is to get back there, right? You can look at Tara Vanderveer, the GOAT, right? She's won more games than any male or female coach all time in college basketball. She's won three national championships, only three. And before she beat Arizona in 2021, you know, the last time she won a national championship, 1992, I think it was. That shows you how hard it is to not only get back there, because she's made a bunch of Final Fours, but to get into that championship game and win. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy thing. What Gino Auriemma did, has done, what Pat Summitt has done, is incredible. Most teams can't do it. You look at Coach Joan Bonvicini, a tremendous coach. She won a lot at Long Beach before she came to Arizona. She went to the Final Four a bunch of times. She comes to Arizona. She takes Adia's senior year. They go to the Sweet 16, and that's great. She has incredible talent coming in for the next, what, 6, 7, 8 years? Most times they barely get out of the second round. Why? Because it's so hard when you get into the tournament to win.
Yeah, and you mentioned too, like just in the era of the transfer portal with NIL, how that changes the team building. And I don't want to sit here and say that they're better off without Kalen Gilbert, right? Or they're better off without Maya Najee or some of the players that have transferred even before the season, some of them who are playing really well at their other places. But is this, I guess this is easy to say right now, Arizona made the tournament. They haven't lost in the tournament. Nothing's, the season's not over. But is it fair to say that maybe this group now is an Adia Barnes group? Like, she's a certain type of coach who needs a certain type of player to get the most out of that roster. That, I mean, you always want five stars. You want the best talent you can get no matter what. But that maybe the group she has now that's on the roster going into this game against Auburn is more of an Adia Barnes roster that she's going to be able to get the most out of because they have the right personalities, the right skill set, that maybe that mix wasn't where it needed to be before.
I think so. I think it's a little bit of a combination because, you know, Bray is a five-star, and Jada might be, and Montea was a five-star. Now, Skylar is like Sam Thomas. She was like 96 in the class. But it's a combination of getting somebody who has talent, who will take coaching, right, and meet you halfway so that you can help develop them, and somebody who has that mentality. I mean, if you look at the best Adia Barnes coach teams, they have a chip on their shoulder. The Ari McDonald's teams, right? They all had a chip on their shoulder because they were trying to build the program back up because they were overlooked, maybe in recruiting and all that kind of stuff. A lot of these kids on this team have the same thing. I mean, even if you look at an Esmeri Martinez, nobody really paid attention to her. You know, nobody thought, you know, I know she came from somewhere, you know, she came from the Dominican Republic, played high school here, but people really weren't seeing her. And, but Bette Shelby, Coach Bette Shelby saw her. She saw her in a tournament, played with Cordosa from South Carolina, was in the same tournament in Washington, D.C., before Bette went to Maryland to coach. And she remembered her. And she saw like great things. And it takes that one person, right? So a lot of these kids just, for whatever reason, even if they are a five-star, they still maybe have a little chip on their shoulder. And that's all it takes to be the right person to be in Adia Barnes' system. Because she needs those kids who just buy in, who feel like they have something to prove, and who are willing to be coached and be developed. It's not always easy. Her system's not easy, but you have to be willing to learn that system. And if you do, you know, what we've seen is, and we've talked about this before, right? Erin McDonald was not Erin McDonald when she walked in the door. She became Erin McDonald. She was the third, drafted number three in the WNBA draft. Now she was in the finals in Perth in Australia in the WNBL league and was the MVP of her team. She's going to come back and play with the Sparks. But like that would have never happened had she not wanted to play for Adia Barnes, mm-hmm. right? And decided, like, I'm going to be coached by you. That means I got to work hard. I'm going to work hard. Sam Thomas, another great example, comes in as a 93, 94, 96 player in her class, develops, gets a training camp contract with the Mercury, makes the team, very unheard of, and becomes a pro player. Like, that stuff doesn't happen unless the stars align. And what the stars aligning means, you have the right mentality. You come in here, you're ready to work, and it all happens. I mean, same thing is happening now for Helena Poyo. She's on fire now, right? Mm-hmm. She's one of the best defenders in the country. She's getting, Adia Barnes is getting calls from WNBA teams asking about Helena Poyo. A year ago, that wasn't going to happen. She took that at fifth year, and it's paying off.
Yeah, PJ, while you were talking, you were just, you're gearing up to, I think, already answering the question that I was already planning to ask and validating my opinion that I've expressed on this pod before. So, of course, I want you to validate it because I seek that. Because a few weeks ago, I think I told Adam, for the way this team and their season have played out, before we knew they were making the March Madness tournament, in terms of mentality and mindset and just, lack of a better word, toughness, this team reminds me of the one that kind of started it, which is the team that went on the run in the NIT. And it's like a more talented version, but of that mentality. Is that right? Validate my opinion. I welcome your praise.
Or don't validate it. You could totally tell him he's wrong, and that'd be fine, too.
So I wrote a story about that a while back of this season about how I compared them to, I believe it was that team.
So I'm a plagiarist is what you're saying. Damn it.
Great idea, Brett.
And there was that year, and I'll tell you why. Because, and I went back and looked at this. In 2019, they beat Texas, and they got ranked, and Erin was National Player of the Week. And then they beat Stanford, and then the world shut down, right? They would have hosted NCAAs that year. So I went back to the year before, and I picked out three or four games to compare it to. And this was, I believe, I want to say right after they went through that streak where they lost a bunch of games by like 8 points. Total. Remember, they went up to the Pacific Northwest and they lost up there, and they lost by 1 point to Colorado at home. They beat Utah. Then they go back up. They go up to the Washington schools and the Oregon schools and all of that. And I sat down and did this because in that year, before they went on that run, you see a couple of games where it was within the grasp, right? And they just couldn't finish. The other team was obviously a much better team, had been there, done that before. And in the last, couple minutes, they just took over. Or it's not that they took over, but like when you look at these games, it's like Erin misses a shot. Like Sam misses a shot. Dominique misses a shot. You know, it's like one of those things where those players, it's the same type of loss that they were experiencing at that time. And so I found that really fascinating, that it was very similar to that year leading up to then. They were on the bubble then. Remember, we didn't know what was going to happen. They end up hosting the WNIT and winning. And that was a big turning point because obviously for them to do that at home gave them so much energy and confidence, and it led into beating Texas and doing what they did. I mean, they went from, you know, not being ranked on nobody's radar, winning the WNIT, which is a secondary tournament, to you're going to host the NCAAs. That's what they went to. And that was a dramatic jump, which I believe that next year they will have it. They will be ranked, maybe not right away, but they will beat some team in the non-conference. They will be ranked. And I think a similar thing will happen. Maybe they won't, maybe the host, maybe they won't, but I think that they're on that trajectory to get back in it like that.
That was going to be my next question here, because like that WNIT champion, that was year three of Adia Barnes's tenure. Now she's in year eight.
Yeah.
Is it, I mean, do these reset years kind of happen every few seasons? Is that kind of necessary as far as like a coach, you think, where they have to reset maybe their style too, or what they're looking for in their players? Because, you know, Arizona, I guess they're not established like this is the system. This is just a machine every single season, you know, like what Stanford has, for example. But is this going to be looked back at as a similar season where it's like, you know what? That got them to this next era of Arizona women's basketball that, okay, like the WNIT team that 2 years later than the championship game, is this going to be that kind of foundational season that gets Arizona to that next iteration of the great Wildcat basketball?
I think so. I think it's kind of a reset season, although they're in it and they...
Yeah, I mean, the season's not over, right? I mean, they have a chance to do something still.
They made that NCAA tournament. They're finishing well. Whatever happens tomorrow, the next day, whatever, it doesn't matter. I think, you know, to be really honest, I've thought about this a lot. I think it's the... Part of it is the perfect storm that I talked about before. And also part of it is if Adia had started coaching here earlier, right, that wasn't like the third year and then all this stuff happens the very next year, right? Basically, it's COVID. Mm-hmm. And then it starts all this stuff happening. If she had started coaching earlier and maybe she had built up a little bit more time, right? I think it all goes down to recruiting. And I'm going to tell you, and this is going to sound, this is a wacky kind of theory, but hang in there with me. So Adia starts recruiting and like top kids just won't even listen to her, right? Because the minute you get a job, you're behind. Mm-hmm. You're completely behind. She was on the road from the day she got her job all the whole first season and probably into the second season for a long time, just trying to start talking to kids and everything. Some of those kids that she was talking to, I think back then could have been Brea, right? Because she was talking to Brea and gave her an offer when she was like in eighth grade. So what happens is you have to start, some of this has changed, but you got to start early on kids. So she was behind. So what happens is they got so good so fast that the recruiting wasn't there yet. So she was already playing in the transfer portal. She brings in Ari, Dominique, Titi, Trinity, Amari Carter, and that brings obviously the level up. Mm-hmm. So she goes to the national championship game, goes in the portal, it's COVID, doesn't have enough time to really get to know those kids, brought in the wrong class, right? And it sort of transfer class and it messes you up. The regular recruiting, kids didn't see you till that moment, till 2021, right? So it's not until the next class that people are like, oh, I saw you play in the national championship game. You look like a great coach. That's when she started getting the 2021 and the 2022 class, which is all gone now, I guess. And those are the kids also who did not do official visits because it was COVID. So it's like you did them too quick. They made a decision too quick. You made a decision too quick. And it wasn't a good fit. So it all comes back to the recruiting kind of wasn't able to catch up to what she was doing on the court. And because of that, then it gets mixed up. And then you throw COVID in there where nobody can really meet each other in person. And get the vibe of like, oh, you're not just smiling on Zoom and seem like a good kid. Or the coach seems good because she smiles a lot, right? You're like at practice and you're like, oh my God, I would never want to do that at practice. Or, oh, that's going to be my teammate. I'm not coming here. Or, oh, it's hot in Tucson. I don't want to go there. Whatever your reason is, right? You, when you come on an official visit, you're there. You get it. It's completely different. It's a combination of those things. Now, with the 2023 class, she was able to spend some time with and got good kids. The four kids who are here are great kids who will most likely stay and are the basis of a big run and big success. And so, and then going forward, the two things that have to happen are you build off of the success. And now because we have NIL, and I'm going to say this right out loud, kids are asking money to go to school. Recruits.
They should.
Right? They're asking for money. And up to this point, the University of Arizona hasn't had money to give to the women's basketball program. I'm just putting that out there. And they need the money if they want to get top transfers and continue to get the right kids to bring in here to do this. They have to invest in women's basketball in other ways now to make it to continue and maintain success.
Makes sense. Does that make
sense? Yeah. I mean, I recall some conversations during that time period where Adam and I would talk amongst ourselves. And I think with you of how do you find minutes for all of these players and is it, how's it going to work out? And, you know, sometimes things work their way out when for better or worse. But I think that leaves us with what you were just saying is, you know, it seems like that core foundation is here. This team is a reflection of Adia Barnes' program. They are the foundation for a run at some point in their careers here. What's the realistic expectation as we head into this tournament for this year's team?
I think they are a second round team. Now, we'll see what happens on the court. But I do think, once again, they're a second-round team. I think that they can win. They can beat our Auburn. And I think that they can beat Syracuse. And then it's up to UConn, right? And UConn is a much better team than Arizona is. We all know that, right?
And, I've heard that one before, though. And,
yeah,
you know.
Before, right? And Adia knew how to beat Geno last time. So you never know. But the thing is, if they win two games, this game, and then they beat Syracuse, and they go into that game against UConn, they might be feeling really good about themselves and feeling like now they sort of feel like nobody can touch us, right? They might catch that little magic, and you don't know what could happen. This is a team that could do that. We don't know. But I really do think they're a second-round team. And I do, I get that their record was only 17-15, but when you look at all the other things that matter, yes, they belong in the NCAA tournament, but I also think they solidly belonged in it. They should have been like a 10 seed. They shouldn't be in this first playing game. But I'm not on the committee. I wasn't in the room, right?
No, none of us were. And I know for this team, they're obviously happy to be in the tournament, but it sounds like they have the right mentality to make that kind of run. Of course, if they get to UConn, it'd be like three games within like 6 days. So that's a lot for a team that's playing with so few players. But at the same time, if everyone's doing it, then no change there. We'll see. Right. The beauty of the tournament is the season's not over until it's over. So everyone has a chance right now, including Adia Barnes' team, which has been playing some pretty good basketball down the stretch. And with the way they play defense and play hard, I don't imagine anyone wants to face them. And that's not a bad place to be for a team going in. Like a heavy underdog who knows it can, you know, play and beat like Stanford, for example, on the road, right? There's that they can hang with USC and some of the best players in the country. Like it's not a bad place. You'd rather be a favorite, sure, be a one seed. But hey, if you're going to be an underdog, be this type of underdog.
Absolutely.
All right, well, that's PJ Brown from the Arizona Daily Star, Tucson Star, the Wildcaster app. Find her on the Twitter machine at PJBrown09. She is covering the team on the road with them. PJ, we appreciate the time and the insight. And, yeah, hopefully you're out of town for a little while.
That would be nice. That would be very nice.
All right, so we'll see what happens there. But when we come back, we're going to talk more tournament basketball. Welcome back. It's Wildcat Radio 2.0. Thanks again to PJ Brown for sharing her insight and just what's going on with the Arizona Wins basketball team there. Because, Brett, I think if I was clear in the interview or not, I don't know. But, you know, a few weeks ago, did not expect Arizona basketball to be playing. Like, I likened them to the baseball team last year, where it's like it was a clunky, disappointing season that if had it not ended with a kind of surprising run to the postseason, you'd be like, oof, like that's not great. But they made it there. So I was like, you're like, okay, that's some pretty good coaching, right, to get them there with this team. I don't think Adia Barnes has the pressure to win against Auburn or to make a deep run, because the fact that they're just here playing in a tournament in whatever capacity, I think, is an accomplishment for this group. But, you know, PJ's right, where it's like this is the foundation is being set. It's like, okay, if they can make a run, terrific. But this, I guess when I say a run, like the big picture run doesn't have to end in this tournament, no matter when the tournament ends for them.
Yeah, and I think I said on this very pod 2 weeks ago that I didn't think that they were going to get in just because I thought the overall record was so low, and I just assumed that teams will get screwed because of that. I'm happy to be proven wrong. Also, I am somewhat influenced by PJ's argument of the short bench. Most teams drop to a 7-player rotation.
Which is
March,
true.
And I'm like, you know what? I concede the point. That's a reasonable argument. The question is whether they are going to have been worn out from the prior, you know, handful of games.
Probably wouldn't show up in the first game. Probably wouldn't show up in the second game as the reason. But if they win their next two and they do play UConn in basically like the NCAA tournament second round-ish, so to speak, I could see that being an issue. That'd be like 3 games in 6 days. That's a lot.
Well, if you're exhausted and playing UConn, then yeah, you're
good luck.
I mean, good luck playing UConn in general.
But yeah, but if they make it that far with this team, that the season goes down as a success. Like, it's a weird season, right? They lost a lot of talent to injuries and just people leaving the program, and it kind of is interesting. Like, okay, where do they go from here? Who comes back? What can they add to this? I know they got some recruiting news over the last week or so. But it's like, is this another foundational season? Is it the reset where it's like, okay, the next great team, the next team that's going to have a chance to make a run to the Final Four, to a national championship game, this is year one of that. You know, is this the WNIT championship you're like you were talking about, how you mentioned before, which was a great idea you stole from PJ. But like, are we going to look back at this season and be like, okay, that's where the foundation was set? And maybe we won't know that for a couple of years, but we could be looking at the beginning of the next really good thing.
I think so, and I hope so.
Yeah. I hope this team makes a run. Assuming they don't, it doesn't mean that, like, all is lost with the program or everything, like, you know, anything like that.
Well, and I think, you know how I feel about the narratives. Mm-hmm. But there was a time, especially externally, that the view of the narrative in Arizona with the players departing and the way they departed, it was, you know, there was probably some pressure on Adia Barnes and this team to close the season strong, and they have. And hopefully they will continue to do so, because I believe in Adia Barnes, and it's, you know, I want to see her see success, and I'm a Arizona fan, so let's see what the ladies can do.
Yeah, so that game is 4:00 Arizona time on Thursday. Of course, the men play at 11:00 Arizona time on Thursday, so it's going to be a busy day for Arizona basketball fans. I'm sticking with basketball. The Brett Arizona Wildcats, to get some recruiting news on a Wednesday when we're recording. Picking up more players whose names I'm going to struggle with. They're just going with the football theory. Josen Sanon is what I'm going to go with. He's a 5-star 2025. He's supposed to reclassify to 2024. He's like a big guard, a scoring guard, who physically has all the tools. And it's like, okay, he was a top 10 recruit, you know, protected first-round pick in 2025. All of a sudden, next year's recruiting class looks absolutely loaded, which it did before, looks even more so now, which is good because Arizona figures to lose, you know, at least 4 players from its starting lineup.
Adam, I was constantly told that Tommy Lloyd couldn't recruit, though. So I'm very confused by all of this.
Yeah, well, I mean, every blind squirrels, nuts, all that stuff. I mean, this so, is, yeah. They already had Carter Bryant coming in. Jamar Phillips was coming in, right? And there's the other
Emmanuel
big
Stevens.
Stevens, I think. Yeah, I mean, like they already had a really good recruiting class, and obviously the transfer portal is a big deal too. And I mean, obviously Arizona's best player this season was a transfer portal type of guy, late transfer portal. But yeah, it's a nice little like, okay, that's a nice get for them. Someone who's like an NBA talent, like who looks like a surefire NBA talent coming into college. Like that's. You need some more of those guys. Like, this year's team doesn't have those. Like, I mean, they have guys who make to the next level, but they weren't, like, guaranteed. They weren't, like, one-and-done type talent. And I think you don't want to rely on those guys. That makes you Kentucky. But you should probably have a few of them here and there to supplement your more veteran rosters.
Well, and with Sanone, I think as he pronounced it, and I will repeat it, assuming that's correct, you know, all indications are he's a volume scoring type guy. Like I read that as he slots into Caleb Love's role, right? Now you have Jamari Phillips and Carter Bryant who are both kind of wings. So you know, that, you know, perimeter gets a little packed with 19-year-old Kylan Boswell, presumably as the starting point guard next year.
Him or Jaden Bradley, I would think, depending on who comes back. Yeah.
I mean, you know, but you're looking like this team is pretty stacked. I'm a little curious about the big situation. I think Emmanuel Stevens, a little more of a developmental guy, you know, who's going to start at the four. I don't know. Are you going to go a Vassar, Grievous monster lineup?
Doan Anderson still with the program.
You know,
the transfer portal's a thing. Like they'll hit the portal.
I know.
Yeah.
Let's just not make the four peaks a thing in the lineup, Adam.
No, that would be dumb. That would be bad. But no, I just like obviously they're not. If you looked at Arizona's roster, we went to tournament last year. We're like, okay, this is what they're going to lose. No one had predicted Keyshawn Johnson. No one really knew who Keyshawn Johnson was. No one had predicted Caleb Love, especially, right? Like the team. I don't think there's like Krivas wasn't a thing. I don't think that, and he ended up being a contributor this season. So, we'll see. But it's never a bad thing to pick up recruit. Good recruiting is especially high level guys on the eve of March Madness when you're. About to play financially as a two seed. It's like the rich getting richer. I'm for it when one of the teams I like is the rich.
Hot take. It's a good thing to get a top 10 recruit. Ready to go out on a limb, Adam.
I mean, fair. see, any other basketball stuff we got to get to, Brett? Because I know there's some football scheduling news. Baseball has been iffy. Softball, same.
Hey, baseball. Beat GCU after winning the last game of the ASU series.
And I think if you do like the aggregate scoring, they beat them by more overall. Like overall, Arizona was plus in run differential that series. But yeah, losing 2 or 3 to ASU at home is never a great look.
No, but isn't there like an RPI or some equivalent in college baseball where they're like barely above 500 record with the strength of schedule is probably pretty high?
Yeah, but ASU's not that good and losing 2 of 3 of them. And it's baseball. But it's still early. Like last year's baseball team struggled for a lot of the year and they got hot at the end of the season and made the tournament. You know, softball is off to an okay start. They've had a pretty tough schedule too. Football, Brett. Friday night games. One on the road, one at home. Kansas State, the 13th, September 13th, Friday night on the road. Houston, November 15th at home. Yay.
Is it a yay?
Back the yay.
I hate love you for that.
I mean, I don't mind. I think the Houston game comes after a bye week. So like a Friday night game after a bye week isn't really a problem. You know, you don't like on the short week so much.
And I think the other one is after the NAU game. So like not as big of a deal, hypothetically.
It shouldn't be.
Yeah, I'm mostly selfishly looking at the Friday night home game as a season ticket holder that lives out of state trying to figure out how many games I can get to and saying, well, that one's probably not going to happen. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, obviously the moving to the Big 12, and that's like, oh, yeah, that's right, it's happening, right? The Big 12 is going to be a thing next season. Is that there's going to be a lot of changes like that. Like there's a lot of games to be played in the Big 12. So they can't play them all at the same time on a Saturday. So there's going to be more of those off-night games. And, of course, what channel they'll be on. There's no Pac-12 network anymore, but they're going to be, like, on the ESPN streamings or whatever. Like it's going to be an adjustment, but I think it'll be fun. But either way, yeah, it's like, hey, football season. It's going to be a thing.
And you know what, Adam? For as much as I appreciated the honor, talent, and content of the Pac-12 Network, I will not miss trying to fumble my way through logging in through my parents' Cox account so I could stream games wherever I was. I'm finally going to admit it publicly, Adam. Come at me, Pac-12 Network.
You're going to get like a cease and desist order from like Washington State and Oregon State. Because apparently the Pac-12 Network is still going to be a thing.
Okay.
Yeah. That's just what's happening. Sorry you don't like it. And if you end up in prison over this or something, well, you know, whoops.
My wife's a defense attorney. I should be fine. She's a defense attorney from Pullman, though, so she might rig the case against me.
See, all of a sudden your house of cards is crumbling down, man.
Oh, no. What have I done?
Well, I mean, we could talk all the football, all the future basketball, all that we want. But, of course, I mean, this week is all about the NCAA tournament, men and women, both playing on Thursday as we record here on Wednesday. So this is the last night where we're guaranteed to have two teams still playing college basketball. Are you nervous? As we wrap up here, are you nervous?
Yeah, not really, but I think I'm better at removing some of my fandom emotionality from March Madness just because I know that it can be chaos.
I think I'm not nervous because I am confident that, I mean, I think the women are probably going to win their game too, but I think the men are going to beat Long Beach State. I'm not terribly worried about that. But granted, if we get, you know, through halftime or, you know, there's 30 minutes gone by and Arizona's only up by like three or down. Okay, because like I think the nerves that I want to see, like I like this team. I like the way it's been put together. I think it's been a fun team. I think they've been in some great moments. I'd like to see one of these Tommy Lloyd teams really break through. One, because like Arizona fans deserve a Final Four, especially it being in Glendale, see what can happen. But I just think like they deserve to just have something go right in the NCAA tournament. You know, the Miller years, there was some bad luck with injuries and just running into Wisconsin. And so like just I want to see what a nice long run looks like, because, you know, four teams get to make a Final Four run. It can happen. And I'd like to see Arizona be like, oh, what'd that be like? You know, it's been a while. Like, that seems fun. And knowing that this is the last run for this group, right? There's four guys on this team who have been key guys. A couple of them, like Balo and Pella Larson, have been around this their third season with Arizona. Like, this team's going to be altogether different next season. I'd like to see this team keep playing for as long as possible, because I like this group.
Well, I think Tommy Lloyd has paid his dues as an assistant and now has had enough success overall as a head coach that I really just, part of me just wants them to have a nice Final Four run, not just for like great because we're going to win. I just don't want to hear the insufferable repeat of trolls. because it's just such nonsense, because it's college basketball, it's March Madness. The best team rarely actually wins in the March Madness tourney. That's why it's great and heartbreaking and fantastic and entertaining. Mm-hmm. And like, yeah, I think there's a higher likelihood Arizona crushes Long Beach State than they lose to them. But also, they can't take any team lightly. They've proven that.
Higher likelihood doesn't mean zero chance for the other way around. Like, exactly. You have to win your games in front of you. It starts with Long Beach State for the Arizona men, Auburn for the women. And one team is expected to make a deep run, the other not so much, which totally is going to change the perspective on how each of them do, right? Like, when you have the expectations, it's one thing. When you're just, hey, whatever you do is gravy, you know, people view things differently. But, yeah, we'll see what happens. NCAA tournament's here.
You mean you're not looking forward to the Arizona women's team makes the Sweet 16 and gets blown out by UConn? What a great run. Tommy Lloyd loses in the Sweet 16 by 1 point. What a fire him.
Yeah, no, that's never fun. Anyway, you know, I think that does it here. Like, I think we're ready for the tournament. This is what every Arizona basketball fan waits for. It's here. Get to see what happens. You can find us at commentary and everything on social media at Wildcat Radio AZ. Of course, you're at Wildcat Radio AZ. It's also your promo code for home field. They got some really cool stuff right now. Go there, your first purchase, use promo code Wildcat Radio AZ, you get 15% off. Pretty awesome. I think I'm going to wear a home field shirt tomorrow for the games. I don't know which one. I have a few to choose from, but I think I'm going to wear home field.
I just got that McHale Magic sweatshirt. I might wear that tomorrow.
Nice. So, yeah, Wildcat Radio AZ is your promo code for that. Plus, at least if you wear their gear, I mean, it's soft. It's comfortable. You can find us on iTunes and Spotify. Make sure you subscribe to us on both accounts and give us a rating and a review on iTunes. We will read that review on the air. Brett, do we have any new reviews?
We do not.
That is okay. That's okay. We appreciate y'all listening, though, of course, review or not. But yeah, NCAA tournament is here. We'll talk about what happens next week. And until then, remember to bear down.
Bear down.